Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Somebody makes me want to think about tomatoes. On this cold day, it's a great time to think about tomatoes, right? As the wet rains set in and we kind of put an end to last year's tomatoes, this will be the end of it, effectively, for most folks. If you've got some tomatoes, you can leave them out on the vine just to see. In some areas that are very warm, you may be able to cover the tomatoes with a cloth. And you might see a little bit more ripening, but it's going to stay pretty chilly all week. And I think basically tomatoes are done. But it's a good time to start thinking about next year's tomatoes. And somebody asked me, what tomato was it that you recommended? And I had a lot of success with it last year. Very pleased with it. My experience and with 1 year of growing is not everybody's experience and not every year, even for myself. So I should be cautious. But it has a lot of the ingredients that make for a great tomato for a place like the Gulf Coast. And we need special things on the Gulf Coast. We need tomatoes that don't take forever to produce. Because if you get a tomato, I mean, there are tomatoes out there that don't produce for 110, 115, 120 days. If you do that in a place like the Gulf Coast, you're never going to pick a tomato. Because by the time July gets here, those kinds of tomatoes they're just going to give up. So what you need is a tomato that starts producing relatively early. That's ideal. Before we get to those hot July nights, because that puts a damper on everything. And so I often recommend plants that start that produce pretty early and that still have a good flavor. And generally that means smaller tomatoes, I'll have to say, for a lot of reasons. And a lot of the smaller tomatoes will actually keep trudging along through July. The bigger tomatoes won't. They just don't make it. But some of the smaller tomatoes do. And they'll just make it. They're more tolerant of those high night temperatures. It may be because they're closer to their ancestors. I don't know. For whatever reason, the smaller tomatoes do well. The one that I recommended was one called Santiago, however you want to say it. Santiago. And names are arbitrary, and there are a lot of tomatoes out there, as I'm discovering, called Santiago. And several from Europe, they will not do well. This is a Santiago from Guatemala, and it's served up by a company from California. Let me look at the name of that company again. Santiago Tomato from Tomato Fest. Tomato Fest is where I got it. So if you look up Tomato Fest and look for their version of Santiago, it's a really cute tomato. Really did well. It's not a cherry. It's bigger than a cherry. It's not a full-size tomato either. It's kind of in between. It's a great for slicing. It actually slices up real well. We use it on sandwiches. It's one of my favorite slicers, even given the choice of big ones, because it just fits sandwiches in lots of ways, has lots of great flavor. It's a great cooking tomato as well. Doesn't have an excess of seeds either. Santiago, a really beautiful tomato, seems to be really disease resistant, really heat resistant, and it starts producing earlier. And it probably about as well as any tomato I've grown stands a chance of being a full season tomato on the Gulf Coast. It may make it through in your yard those July temperatures and continue on until the end of the year. Santiago. That's, I think for the Gulf Coast, that's the one tomato I'm going to say I really, really was happy with last year. And it's worth trying those seeds from Tomato Fest. You're asking at the right time because you're going to have to order the seeds. And you're going to have to grow them yourself because they ain't going to be at Walmart and Home Depot. Not much is. That's really valuable in terms of plants. Sorry to say that out loud, but it's true. There's a couple of others that really interest me, and I haven't tried them yet. But I've been looking through. I always look through every year, trying to come up with interesting varieties. This is a good time. These cold days, kind of a good time to do that. There's one I noticed in Totally Tomatoes, and I don't know whether to believe this or not. And so I'm going to grow it just to see. But you should try it too. It's Quedlinburger Frühlebe. Sorry, it's a German tomato. I didn't make the name up. Quedlinburger Frühlebe, an extremely early German heirloom that continually produces until frost. 40 days. It takes 40 days to start producing. That is about as early as they get. If that is a good-tasting tomato, and it supposedly takes heat pretty well, in spite of it being a Quedlinburger Frühlebe German tomato, that's a tomato to look into, so I suggest you try that. We'll look through the catalogs this winter, and we'll see what's coming out. We'll see what some new possibilities are. You know, the problem with catalogs, there's so many tomatoes out there now, and so many of them that just aren't worth your time. But it is worth looking through and thinking about it and trying to match what we know about the tomatoes with our climate, and then trialing them. So it's something I suggest doing. Hey, Vern, tell me what's going on.
Hey, how are you this morning, Bill?
Good.
We got a question, Bill. We've got three trees that we planted in some very, very hard soil. And we got actually it's one live oak and two magnolia trees. The live oak was planted 5 years ago, and the magnolias were planted maybe 25 years ago. And the problem is that the soil was very, very, very hard. And the trees are stunted, and with the live oak that was planted about 5 years ago, we thought that we had planted a large enough hole to give the root ball enough room, but apparently we didn't. And the question is, can we transplant these the tree up and transplant it, or is it too late? Have we done damage to the tree?
Well, so let me ask you, how big were these trees when you planted?
Oh, gosh. I guess they were maybe 5 foot tall.
Okay, that's fine. I think you'll be okay. Let's look at this. Hard soil is I'm not sure why the soil is hard. Was it a pasture, or it must have been pasture?
Let me explain to you where it was. This will probably help. It's on Perdido Bay, and it's within 30 feet of the water. And it is about 15, 16 feet above mean tide. It's on somewhat of a little bluff, and I mean this soil is just like rock. And what's curious about this particular soil is that when Sally came, we didn't lose any trees in that area where these small trees were, but the further we got back off the lot, let's say 50 and 60 feet, we lost several trees, and they completely blew over, root from the root system and everything. But all the trees that were where this hard soil was, the soil was hard enough to hold the root system in place. And all the trees that were closer to the water were all intact.
So when you say hard, you mean you have a hard time getting a shovel in it. Does it get any easier when it's wet?
Not really. But it gets a lot easier the further back from the water you get.
Yeah. Well, my suspicion is that you have some kind of hard pan there. You certainly probably, it's probably droughty soil.
Yeah.
It's funny. Sand can get very compacted. And it gets so compacted that it really feels like concrete at times.
Right,
and particularly when it dries out. And your soil now may be so compacted that it really has and in such a position that it really has a hard time ever getting wet again. Here's my suggestion. No, I don't think you can move the trees at this point. I think it'd be a mistake. But here's a little trick. Take a fork, a garden fork. Get the best garden fork you can find because it's a lot of work. And it'll be harder on the fork than it'll be on you. And you can use that fork to wiggle into the ground. You can't do this with a shovel. It doesn't work as well. But you can wiggle that fork into the ground as deep as you can and then just lean back. And go out from the plant about, say 18 inches. And do that and wiggle back and crack the soil. And I hear music playing in my ear, which means I'm pushing the brake, which means I got to take a break. But if you'll hold on, we'll be right back, Vern. Is that okay?
Great, because I got more questions.
Good.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Through the window, by the window, that is where I'll be
Okay.
With me.
Let's get around this guy and let's get down to business here. Thank you. So we were talking with Vern, and Vern has some trees and really having a hard time getting those trees to grow. And it's in really hard soil. It could be a clay soil that's really distinctive. It's possible. Or it could be a good sandy soil that's just gotten very compacted and is drying out. Excuse me. When soil dries out, and the sand grains don't get lubricated and they don't move around very easily. But excuse me about the sneezing. But here's what happens. The roots can't actually penetrate the surrounding soil either, but you can break that soil. You can crack it. You don't want to turn it upside down. You just want to crack it. And what I do when I get in a situation like that, when I want the roots to expand, is think of digging out from the plant in a cross pattern, so that the roots have ways north, east, west, and south, and just dig straight out rather than trying to dig a whole circle. Just crack that soil out from the edge of about where you think those roots are. Just start cracking that soil. And I always say, if you can crack soil about 8 feet around your plant, out 8 feet in any direction, that makes a ton of difference. You don't need to dig deep, but what you do need to do is dig wide. And a lot of people don't make a deep enough hole and a wide enough hole. They worry about how deep it is. Don't worry about how deep it is. Worry about how wide it is. So that's the first thing I can recommend. And Vern, the second thing I can recommend is make sure you didn't plant those plants too deep. And that happens a lot. And if they're too deep, there should have been no soil on top of that root ball at all. The root ball should have sat above the surrounding soil. I know that is hard to believe.
I believe we did. I believe we did that.
Good. So just crack the soil out as far as you can. And I would go out, you know, about 6 feet, just crack the soil around where that root ball was, and those roots will begin to fill that. I would also put mulch on top of it because that keeps that soil from recompacting. So when you break the soil, just add the mulch, and it'll make a ton of difference. Mulch can be in the form of leaves. It can be in the form of pine straw. It can make pine bark, whatever you got. Just put it on there, and that will help. You're actually enlisting soil creatures then. You're actually ringing the dinner bell for the soil creatures. They'll be there. They'll have something to feed on, which they don't have now, and they'll begin integrating that into the soil, and that soil will soften up, and it'll start growing things really, really well. So that's my recommendation. Does that make sense?
Oh, sure. I've got another question too, Bill. As I mentioned, the further we get away from the water, the soil gets much better. And unfortunately, the soil gets softer, and we lost a number of trees during the storm. And we pulled the trees up, and we need to plant more trees. So my question is, we have a lot of light that we never had before. So what would you recommend? What trees would you recommend? We'd like to get some fast growing trees planted. What would be the fastest growing trees you could recommend that we could start planting to start getting us some shade? I know it's going to take a while, but what would you recommend as far as the fastest growing trees that we could plant?
Well, I love sunlight, and sunlight on the ground is not always a bad thing. But what do you want the shade for? Do you want it for your house?
Well, the lot was heavily shaded, but just for the aesthetics of it. I mean, we are going to enjoy having the sunshine, and we're not going to be able to completely shade the lot, and that's not what I have in mind. But I would like to have if you saw it now and saw it before, you wouldn't recognize it because it's pretty bare. All right now.
Yeah. So interestingly, I'll tell you, and this may not matter to you, but the way the lot is now is probably more like the way it was traditionally than the way it was when it was full of trees. I would use the sunlight well. And we've lost most of our native plants around Perdido Bay because of the dense shade. And amazing things can happen in that sunlight, so watch for that. What trees would I recommend? If you have well-drained soil, if you're sitting well above sea level, and it's not a wet spot.
Oh, it's not.
Yeah, then I would recommend longleaf pine.
Okay.
It'll grow fast, and it provides the best shade for that situation. I would be careful, you know, this is not about planting around your house, but on the rest of your lot. And I would recommend longleaf pine if you can find the pines. And you're going to have to start small, and that's good. With any tree, I recommend starting small because they're going to pick up and grow much faster. But longleaf pine would be the best. Slash pine will grow pretty fast, cast a lot of shade, and isn't my preference, but it may be what you can find easier, slash pine certainly. But there are lots of trees that'll make shade and that grow reasonably fast. If that's the only requirement, you could pick almost anything. Just make sure you don't plant carelessly too close to the house because a lot of those trees may fall again on your house. Right. But lots of trees cast shade. And they all grow pretty fast. Pines certainly grow about as fast as anything in our climate. And longleaf, Longleaf is going to be slow for the first few years, but boy, once it gets started, it grows amazingly fast. Slash pine grows consistently fast, no faster than longleaf in the long run, but it grows fast too. So those would be my recommendations, but enjoy the sunlight too.
Right. Well, what do you think about river birch?
I think it's a terrible tree.
Oh, really?
I think it's just terrible.
Why do you say that?
I think it's the worst possible choice for shade. It's terrible for shade. It gets bugs. It gets aphids.
Growing?
Something terrible. And it's not really. It's not at all. It would not at all like those soils where you are.
Mm-hmm.
Is that enough?
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So. I'd pick. I don't want to beat up on it too bad, but it's just a terrible tree.
Great. Well, I understand. Well, I certainly appreciate it. Thank you so much for your time.
All right, Vern. Good talk to you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Yeah. So, garlic. Jim, good to hear from you, Jim. Jim in Georgetown has got some questions about garlic. So Jim planted some, and that's great. And he probably was pretty judicious in his choices. He always is. And he planted his garlic. And so now it's going to get cold. Is that a bad thing, Jim? Garlic loves cold. It's one of the things that we actually have a problem with in our climate is we don't get enough cold. And the reason I pick certain varieties is because they don't need as much cold as other varieties, but they all appreciate chilly temperatures. How do I talk myself through all of this show so quickly? So, look, we've got another break. Jim, I'm going to come back and answer that question just a little more in a little more detail.
Daylight come and be one, go home. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot bunch.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Yeah, welcome back. It's Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Some questions. Where did we go? Goodness gracious. Jim, garlic. That's where we left off, Jim, and garlic. So Jim got his garlic a little late this year. I got mine a little late this year. I agree. It doesn't always come this late, Jim. Just a word of note. Fillery and a lot of seed processors, folks, have had a lot of trouble for the same reason we've all had lots of trouble. And that is COVID has made it difficult to get workers. It's made it difficult to keep things open. It's made it, if you can imagine, if you're using migrant labor, which a lot of nurseries and farmers are, that doesn't mean they're necessarily illegal. It just means that they're moving from one place to another. One of the things is it's much harder to house folks now because of this, and COVID has made it much more difficult. So a lot of seed companies, a lot of plant companies are having a hard time sending stuff out in a timely way. Oregon and California had Northern California, Oregon, and Washington State had a much bigger problem, not just the COVID, but they had those wildfires. And that really set some people back. It really made things much more difficult to get stuff in and out. So a lot of companies have been a little farther behind. And that's why we got some of our stuff, Jim, a little bit later than normal this year. Normally they'd send it earlier. But you know what? It's going to do fine. For the most part, it's recommended that you plant your garlic late. And it may be a better idea to do that in the South. I prefer to plant it a little earlier in October and early November, but, you know, it may be just as well to plant it late. And we're going to find out, won't we? It's not late by most standards. Most people say that this is the time to do it. Late November is the time to plant garlic, particularly along the Gulf Coast. Even into December, it's fine. So, but you're going to do fine. The cold weather, not an issue. Don't cover it. Do not cover the garlic. This will not be cold enough to have anything but a salubrious effect on your garlic. That means it's going to look good when it's done. Hey, Bo, you were asking about what the best time to plant citrus trees, and I'll have to tell you, not now. I would plant in spring, and what's the best place to look for them? You know, we'll see. But spring, let's talk about it in spring. The Botanical Gardens has been a good source for some unusual varieties. If you just want to, lime trees, never plant those in the yard. Never plant them in the yard. They will die. I don't recommend grapefruit either. It's less well adapted to our climate than some other things. But if you do grapefruit, be real careful about it. Lime, I don't recommend planting in the yard. Lime is a tree for pots. Or you can plant it in the yard, but it'll die. Lemons, you want to be careful and get a Meyer's lemon, and you want to get it on its own roots. So you can call me back in spring. Let's talk about it then so you'll remember. Bill, thank you for waiting. Bill from Fairhope, talking about fig trees. I'm listening, Bill.
Right. Thank you for taking my call. We recently planted two brown turkey fig trees. Do I need to cover them with this cold weather coming in?
No. How's that?
That's good. That's the answer I needed. Thank you very much.
They're going to do just fine. They'll do just fine. They're pretty hardy in our climate. And, you know, one of the things I've figured out with figs is they grow so dadgum fast that anything you can do to slow them down is good. If by some freak chance they were to be damaged by this cold, and they won't be, you'll be better off because otherwise those things grow like crazy. And they get too big. If it gets too big, you can't pick them. But, no, they're fine.
That's good. Well, another quick question. We had two previously, and one died several years ago. And then the last one, this spring, it had leaves, and then all of a sudden it just totally died. What was the possible cause of that? Just old age?
Well, that's a tough thing. These were older trees, or they were trees
no,
just
they
planted?
No, 15, 16 years old.
Well, now that's a tough one. Is it possible that those areas got very wet?
That's a good possibility, yes.
Yes, so I think there's something going on there in terms of really, really wet soil. That would be my best bet. It's hard to kill a fig. It's possible. But it's not easy. And the only way I could think to do it is to have really, really wet soil. And that's my best bet. So I think that there's something about that soil that may be very, very wet where those trees were. Is that
okay.
possible?
Well, very good. I appreciate the no answer. That saves me one. That's one less chore I have to tend to.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill.
All right. Hey, James, it's good to hear you call it cotton trash. We called it gin trash growing up. Now they got all kind of fancy names for it. But, yeah, I know what you're talking about. So you found some?
Well, yes. It was recommended to us.
Yep.
And what got us thinking about it, we actually just used it around some trees and flower beds. And I'm trying to build up some soil, and I'm actually doing what you said about packing the nuts. Stacking stuff up 4 feet tall, but that's a little longer and it's exhausting process.
Yeah.
And you can get cotton trash inexpensive, but we're also been beekeepers, and we were talking. I was asking about how good cotton was for beekeeping, and he goes, "Oh, it's great. For, you know, the bees will love it." However. He goes, the
however.
Instructor goes, however, I've never seen a crop that gets so many chemicals sprayed on it.
That's right.
So you see where I'm headed with this. Do I really want to eat anything?
So, Yeah, so let's talk about that. So, yeah, I learned about plants, unfortunately, in the very worst place, in the middle of a cotton field, scouting cotton. It was my first real exposure to horticulture, and it's the worst exposure possible. But you learn a lot. And one of the things I learned is that there's a time, usually in July, when you can walk into that cotton field and it smells like death, because there are so many dead bugs and so many dead other things. It's probably not as bad as it used to be. It's hard to compare, but I mean, goodness gracious, we were using stinking arsenic into the 60s. And it's why, rice is now contaminated with arsenic. It's insane what we were using on cotton. I think that in general stuff is not quite as bad. I will also say that by the time it becomes gin trash, there's very little of that residue left, and it's probably not significant. I am concerned a little bit about it, but it probably has lost most of its odious qualities when it becomes gin trash, and so I don't think you'll see a practical effect. You certainly won't see any effect on your bees, though any bee that visits a cotton field in the middle of August is likely to be dead. Simply because of all of the crazy stuff that goes into cotton now.
Right.
But it won't affect the gin trash, should not affect your bees, and it will be mostly good for the trees, and I think it's probably not an issue. Could you have an organic garden using gin trash, strictly speaking, under organic codes? No. You couldn't, but it's probably not as bad as all that.
Okay, well, and that was my question is, really, I would not want to use it for my gardening, period, then. Meaning edible garden.
Well, here's the thing. I wouldn't use it. I think it's probably safe. It is probably safe, and I've used it before, and I have never seen any negative effects. I don't think I would grow root crops in it, okay? At least the first year after I put it out. My biggest concern would be that some of the herbicides lingered, and there was residual herbicide, and that it would affect plants. I've never seen that as a problem. And that's probably because mostly people, I've never seen it as a problem. I think that a lot of those herbicides break down. So I'm going to say I don't think you'll see a problem. But you know, it's wise to ask. I wish I could say we've really, really thought this out carefully. I've done a lot of research in various ways, and it's obvious to me that we haven't researched it to the nth degree. We've researched it a little bit, and we mostly found that it doesn't show up in the short term. I don't think you'll see any long-term effects either, but I can't guarantee it.
Okay.
How's that? I wish I could be definitive. Yes.
Yeah, won't be growing any extra appendages then. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I have two more questions for you.
Yes, sir.
And one is, you had mentioned back a few months ago, and you're referring to the tomatoes now from Central America. You had actually, several months ago, mentioned several peppers from Central America. And I was wondering if there's a way to get a list.
So here's some fun ways to think about it. Chinense peppers. So there are four big groups of peppers, and I'm going to mention three of them here in quick succession. The annuum group, A-N-N-U-M, means annual, it means sort of annual. Those are the traditional peppers, jalapenos, bell peppers, they all fall into that group. Annuum peppers are mostly from dry climates, mostly from Mexico, And that's where most of the annuum peppers are from. And so they have a harder time dealing with our humidity and our high night temperatures in summer. However, Chinense peppers that are in the habanero group do really, and they're found throughout the Caribbean, love humidity. They also can be very hot, but there's some very sweet habanero style peppers that have almost no heat or zero heat, but lots of that habanero, wonderful habanero fragrance and spice. And that thing's, oh, goodness gracious, there's the music, and I'm just getting started. Hey, we'll be right back. I'll tell you a little bit more about those peppers.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. So let's talk a little bit about these peppers again, James, and we'll have to do it quick, and there's a lot of discussion, but there's two groups of peppers that I really like, the Chinense peppers, and that includes the habaneros, but there are all sorts of sweet varieties of Chinense pepper that are grown in the Caribbean. Aji Dulce, AJIDULCE. Is a great place to start. And a lot of people sell Aji Dulce seeds. There are a lot of different kinds. And if you can look for that, AJIDULCE is a great place to start. It's almost like saying, what kind of peppers do you like? Because there's so many. And Aji Dulce just happen to be the sweet ones. I love Aji Habanero, which is a great one. I love Aji Omnicolor, which is a fairly hot pepper, but has a great little, it's great for cooking with. And that is actually not a Chinense, but a Bacatum pepper. So there's lots of them, but a great place to start is Aji Dulce. And see what you think about. They're incredibly prolific. You'll end up with so many peppers, you won't know what to do with them all. It's really incredible. And they're a lot of fun to start, and that would be where I would start. Does that help?
Yes, sir, it does.
And you want a full list of all of them. Here's a good place to start. Chiliplants.com, chiliplants.com. They're really good about labeling what they have and giving you good information about how they taste. So you can go to chiliplants.com and you can order the plants from them to sort of get you started if you want a list. I mean, there's hundreds of them, literally. And they sell hundreds of peppers. But it's a great place to get started, and you can actually look at by species. So you can go on there and you can check. I only want to look at the Chinense peppers, Chinense, or I only want to look at the Bacatum peppers. And it's kind of fun, and there's a big list, and it's a good place to get started. And you can kind of learn which peppers you like, and then you can start growing them from seed when you find the right ones you really, really like. How's that?
Hey, that's great. I got one more quick question for you.
Yep.
You were talking about your experimental tomato right here early. When are you going to plant those?
Great question. I'm going to start planting my tomatoes for the Gulf Coast. You know, it's not too soon to start them in early January. If you don't get them started early, before January 15th, you really have most of us have a really hard time getting the peppers, the tomatoes up big enough to put in the garden, because you really want to put them in before March 15th. And as much before March 15th as the weather will allow. So it'd be great if you could put them in the ground March 1st. But to have a tomato big enough to put in the ground March 1st, you got to start them pretty early in January.
Okay.
Don't wait until the last of January, because February is a short month. So do it about the middle of January.
All right. That sounds good. Hey, and
what? All right.
Beth Dodd told me to tell you.
All right. That say it again. I missed you. You faded out.
I'm sorry about that. What I was saying, Beth Dodd.
Oh.
Hello.
All right. The Dodds, famous nursery family from Sims. We miss Mr. Dodd. We miss the family. Hey, thanks for calling, James. Monroe, we've got just a little bit of time, but I'm listening. Tell me what your question was. Monroe's gone. Sorry. Sorry we missed. More questions about tomatoes, I think. Dan's going to supply me with his list. This is Dan's list. Ahi Rico, Ahi Dulce, Ahi Amaretto, Ahi Lemon. So he's got a mixture of sweet and hot peppers. There are some really... Ahi Mango is a really great one. I really like that. It was very productive. It was really, really good. And there's just a lot of these bacatums. Ahi is a name that I don't know whether it's Portuguese or Spanish, but it's a name we see circulated a lot in Central and South America. And it's a name that is associated with these more unusual peppers. You don't usually see that name associated with the peppers of Mexico. So it's a great way to start. When's a good time to transplant a Mayhaw from a pot into the ground? CB Carl asked me. Now. Now is the time to do it. Now is the time to do it. And let's see. Christmas bell. You know, Alan, check, and I'll have to check, that pepper goes under various names. I've seen it sold under the name Champion, but you have to be a little bit careful because several peppers get sold under the name Champion. But I'll look on that. If you'll remind me to do that next week, I'll come back and do that. Dan, you know, there's a lot of threads we're following today. If you'll remind me, if you'll give me some time to get cranked up on that Rag Swamp Preserve, it would be a lot of fun to talk about that. Rag Swamp Preserve, that's not some kind of jelly. We're talking about a real preserve over there, and we'll think about that. It's a good thought. It'd be a good thought. The Ahi Omnicolor is a beautiful pepper. I really love the flavor of it. Ahi Crystal is another great one. Dan, you didn't mention you can use it fresh. It means you don't have to wait for it to ripen before it really develops its perfect flavor. I use it now in Stella Jalapenos, and it has a different flavor. It's not the same flavor at all, but it's really good in the kinds of places you would use jalapenos. I really love it. So a whole new world of peppers out there waiting for us. We can think about those, contemplate those on these chilly days that we're going to have next week. Hey, don't panic. Cover the stuff that's tropical. Things that are truly tropical, like citrus, if they're young plants, they might could use a little bit of cover. The plants that, a lot of plants will benefit from this cool weather, including your garlic, including your collards, including your kale, broccoli. It's going to be kind of the perfect temperature for most of them. If you're up in Citronelle, you might want to throw something over your broccoli. Don't let the sheet touch your broccoli flowers. But throw something over them if you're up around Citronelle, because it's going to be a little bit colder there. Jackson, even a bit colder. I might cover my broccoli. I might even cover my cabbage, because it is going to be pretty chilly up there. But in Mobile, I think they're actually going to do pretty well. Perfect temperature for acclimating them. They're going to develop some sugars. If we miss some of the plants that you've got and you're worried about, we'll call us back next week. We'll talk a little bit more about them, because I think you'll mostly be fine through this cold spell. It's going to be a nice cold spell. Kind of put things to bed. Kind of ease them into the cold weather that we're going to have through the winter here on the Gulf Coast. Not the end of gardening, just a little bit different kind of gardening. Hey, we're going to be back next week. Give us a call.
One of the great things about little boys and little girls is when they grow up, they want to be just like you. I'm John Morgan of Morgan & Morgan. So to moms and dads, aunts and uncles, and grandparents everywhere, remember this. The next time you get in the car and don't buckle your seatbelt, a little boy is watching. And when you decide to text or dial and talk while driving, a little girl is watching your every move. And when you head down the road with a beer or cocktail in the car, that little person next to you is taking it all in. In this life, you have an awesome responsibility to those children who love you the most and want to be you in every way. So make a pledge today to be a good role model to these kids and their friends so that that little boy and that little girl get to grow up and be just like you. Morgan & Morgan, for our children.
No representation is made that the quality of legal services is greater than others. Patrick Montgomery responsible for this ad.